This is Scott Spears, and today's gonna be a really good day, because we're joined by an Emmy Award-winning actor who has kept us entertained for many years. He is outspoken, and I believe his roles have shown us who we are to some degree over the years. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pride, privilege, and happiness to say our guest today is Ed Asner. Ed, how are you?
How are you, Scott?
I am doing wonderful. It is such a joy to have you on the show.
Well, I'm delighted. Where are you exactly?
We're in Ohio, about 45 minutes outside Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Well, my wife's family all came from Columbus, so I've always had great pride and respect in my knowledge of them. Well, good people.
I am glad to hear it. Nothing like the Midwest.
No, that's where I come from.
Kansas, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. What was it like?
Actually, you know, I have to tell you, I've always regarded Kansas as truly the Midwest. I've always thought of Ohio. What a false claim by them to call themselves Midwest. I mean, the fact that George Washington even surveyed in Ohio, how can you call that Midwest?
I'm with you. I understand. It's definitely leaning toward the east, but we'll stick with the Midwest. We in Indiana, we'll stay Midwestern.
Well, if you want to.
Well, I got to tell you, Mr. Asner, starting this interview off, it was kind of unique today. I read a quote. I was searching your name out, and it was reported, I think today, that somebody asked you about the 2012 primaries, and you just answered with one word. You said, crap.
Yes, I believe I said that.
Why did you say that?
Why?
Yeah.
Because our newspapers are dominated with the claims and counterclaims. I mean, I suppose this happens every time. But good God, this is March. We've been going through it since New Year's on. And we're going to be faced with this claim and counterclaim and running. I know people are going to say, hey, that's the democratic process. But why does it have to dominate so much news space? I don't want to read about them, and every time they take a bath or drive with their car, the dog on the roof, I don't care about any of that.
It's very unique. I think I think it's done this before, but maybe not to this degree.
Well, I'm tired of it.
I understand and certainly respect your feelings on that. And the only other current event I wanted to touch on, because it occurred to me I've never heard your feeling on this, what did you make of the whole Rush Limbaugh thing that went down a couple weeks ago?
Well, I'm not a fan of Rush. I certainly think that if the majority of his audience tunes into him for entertainment, fine. If they are influenced by his political and social philosophy, I say not fine. And the fact that he unceremoniously called that girl those names was totally uncalled for, and I was glad he got slapped down.
And that is that. Now we're going to move on to the fun part, the acting.
But you didn't tell me what you think.
What I think? Do you think that's relevant in an interview? What I think? Do you think people would care? I think people care what you think.
Well, they know what I think. I've already said it.
I'll tell you what. I don't mind saying that I certainly think it was inappropriate. Freedom of speech, I think, is valuable, but I'm not sure that's what that was all about.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, then you're a no-good rotten scum. How about that freedom of speech?
Let's get into the good part of the interview.
I thought that was excellent.
Ed, how did you start out as an actor? When did you know you wanted to be an actor?
Well, I started acting. I did radio in high school, and I didn't think of acting as a career, but I loved acting. And then when I got into college, I somehow decided to try out for a play. I decided to go to summer school, and I thought I'd pepper it up by seeing what I could do in the play, and I had no idea whether I'd get there or not. And I ended up doing the lead. And that hooked me.
What is it about being somebody else that is fascinating? I've never done it.
Well, it certainly provides you with the escape if you're unhappy with who you are and where you are. It gives you that moment in time when you become somebody else. And I certainly was seeking that at the time. It is good therapy. It lets you investigate being someone else, trying something else. Let you hone your skills in front of thousands of people. And the better you do it, the more convincing you are, the more you bring it off, the more you're influenced in turn. So it's really a give and take with a bunch of live bodies out there.
What is the difference between playing a character, for instance, like Lou Grant, who is essentially not a person until you make them a person, but you've also played the Pope, who actually was a person.
Yeah.
What's the difference there?
Nothing. I didn't know the Pope. I could only take what I knew of him and what was on the printed page. And it's the same as what I did with Lou Grant, with people around me to guide me who knew him, who knew the Pope, and who said he wouldn't have done this or he would do that. And with that guidance and that direction, I then produced what was known as my version of Pope John the 23rd.
You've also done a great, well-reviewed play across the country, one-person show, really, on FDR. Was it the same thing with FDR?
Well, I revered FDR. He was the only president that I ever knew. And I tremendously valued all of his phenomenal leadership and accomplishments for this country, saved it a number of times. And I read exhaustively what I could about him and was glad to see that my opinion hadn't changed one bit. And that's the man that I present.
You know, it's interesting, I think, to talk about this craft of acting, especially as we've talked about it so far, because I'm amazed that I can watch you all those years as Lou Grant or in Roots or Rich Man, Poor Man, see you in these wonderful roles, but then I can see you as FDR, and at some point, I believe you're FDR.
Yeah.
Some actors don't do that, though. Some actors can't do that. They can't get out of a role. They're very, I don't want to say typecast because I don't like that word, but they can't, they're always that character. What allows you to do that? Because you look like yourself. You look like Ed Asner.
I don't look like FDR, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So how do you end up pulling that off?
The highest compliment paid to me was after a performance somewhere in the Midwest. I can't remember. And one of the women who worked on the show, in the audience, I believe, said, "Mr. Asner, when you first came on, I heard FDR, but when you walked off, I had seen FDR."
Hmm.
And that meant a great deal to me. It's the fact that I try to invest myself in that character as much as possible. And with every character, there will be the basic me, I suppose. But along the way, I will have a line, or I will have an idea wherein I'll put this wrinkle into it. And those people who are out there listening and watching, we'll see see Ed Asner initially, and then all of a sudden I give them the wrinkle, the new idea, the twerk, the twist, and they realize, no, that came out of nowhere, that's somebody else, and they'll latch on to that, and they'll watch for those further twists and wrinkles that I will continue to present, And eventually I convinced them that's FDR.
If you were speaking to a group of young actors, and I'm sure there's some in the audience today, what would you say to them? Just what advice would you give to them?
Well, you don't go into show business to be to make money. That's number one. You go into it for a love of, if you'll forgive my self-laudatory comments, I regard myself as a fine instrument. And when you write notes to your symphony, and you give me those notes to play, my fine instrument will play them better than almost anyone else.
That's interesting. I think that's right on. That makes a lot of sense to me. Want to speed up a little bit to the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which everybody remembers you from. How did you land that role for people who don't know?
I'm sorry, I lost you on that.
How did you land the role of Lou Grant?
I went in. I guess I was submitted, and I went in for the interview, and they gave me the script to read, and I read it. And I hadn't done much comedy up until then. I'd done it on stage, but certainly not on television. And the two producer creators said, "Oh, that was a very intelligent reading." And I said, yeah, that means it wasn't funny. So they said, "When we have you back, we want you to read it crazy, wild, wiggy, wall, all out. When we have you back to read with Mary." And I thought a minute, and I said, "Well, I'm not sure if I understand you rightly. Let me try it that way now. And if I can't do it, don't have me back." That took them aback, I must say. I said, "Well, we do have another appointment, but okay, go ahead, try it." So I did it, and I read it like a crazy man. And they laughed their asses off. And they said, "Read it just like that when you come back to read with Mary." Well, a couple of weeks later, I came back to read with Mary, and had the joy of meeting her and the pleasure of meeting her, and we got down to reading the scene, and I read it. I couldn't remember what I had done, but I read it crazy again, and they laughed again, and I said, "Thank you, and we'll see you." And I left. After I left, Mary turned to them and she said, "Are you sure?" And they said, "That's your Lou Grant."
Mm-hmm. In the original script that you read, was the spunk line that everybody remembers in that original script?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you know, reading that or rehearsing that, that that was going to be the line? That was a seminal moment.
It was a seminal moment, and no, I did not think it would be remembered years later and constantly repeated. But I think what happened, we were on a roll. I was doing well in my character. I had dispensed with any stage fright I had in front of that audience. And as we rolled along, I said the intro to it, "You know what? You got spunk." And she played it perfectly, towing the floor and being all gosh bashful and all that. And she, well. And I took my exact moment. I guess if you had a chronometer, you would have found that I played it exactly at the right moment. And I came back with the insane indictment, "I hate spunk." And that audience erupted with a laugh I had never heard before. I felt that those 300 people in the audience were in my power. I could march them off a cliff if I needed to. And from that point on, we were in clover.
You talked about it a little. That's wonderful. That's a great story. You talked about it there a little bit. Mary Tyler Moore. And when you described what she did in that scene, it reminded me of the Chuckles Bites the Dust, which everybody seems to be of the consensus is the greatest episode of
yeah.
sitcom.
Yeah.
She did that same type of thing in that funeral scene.
Yeah.
Not words, not dialogue. What is it about Mary Tyler Moore? Why is she so good from somebody who's worked with her?
Well, she knows how to fill those awkward moments. She knows how to play the seemingly normal individual caught in a bind, and to struggle and try to break the bonds, and yearning to break out of those bonds, and straining and grunting and heaving, and finally sometimes she does it, and it creates a recognition in all of us that we've been there.
I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but how close is Ed Asner to Lou Grant?
I hold him up as an icon. I think he is a wonderful, beautiful man, and I strive to be like him, to have his honesty, to have his straightforwardness and directness, and to have his solidity, to have his contentment with himself, not being overblown, recognizing his limitations, giving respect where respect is due, and above all, standing up and saying nuts to you when he's exhausted his niceties.
How close are you to that?
Pardon?
How close are you today to all those things that Lou Grant represents?
Oh, no, I'm not close to them at all. I, as you quoted me earlier, talking about the primaries, Lou Grant would have been more judicious than that.
Well, so sometimes you have to step outside the box.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You know, this was another weird coincidence, I guess. I was looking your name up earlier on the internet, and today is the 35th anniversary of the last airing of the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Really?
Yes.
I'll be damned.
Couldn't believe that. Could not believe that when I saw that. So based on that, the first episode, you had him with the spunk line, and the last episode, you had him with the speech. What was that like 35 years ago today?
Well, I wanted to work and make it the most sincere delivery I ever had. I treasure you people was the line I had to say. And I felt it, I meant it, and I wanted to purge any insincerity I might have in delivering that line. I worked very hard to do that. And I came close.
Oh, you nailed it. And I think everybody agrees with it. Does it seem like 35 years ago?
No, not at all. Not at all. It was 7 glorious years of doing that character and being with those people. And that's a treasure that I will always be able to think back on and bask in its glow.
For as great as that was, for all the reasons we've talked about, Lou Grant did go on and went on very uniquely in a drama series. How did that all come about?
Well, everybody was getting their show when it was announced we were going to close. This one got that one, this one got that one. And my agent went to CBS and said, are you interested in taking up Ed Asner? And CBS said, absolutely. So we had to then prepare a show that would satisfy them. I certainly picked MTM as the producing company because I knew no other and I would want no other. So having picked them, I said I would love to do that show if I could have the same producers. That's Alan Burns and Jim Brooks. And they said, yes, we'll do it. So then a month or two went by, and then they came back to me and said, well, we're thinking we want to go to an hour show and have you go back to print journalism. And I thought, well, of course, as long as I'm in your hands, whatever you guys say. I was a very trusting soul in those days. So they said, all right, we'll get to work on it. Well, little did I know that no character like that ever made that kind of transition from a half-hour, three-camera audience participation comedy to a one-hour drama, more or less, with no audience. And no actor has ever done it before. I have a feeling no actor will ever do it again, because it was like crossing to the dark side of the moon. And I would say we fortunately had time to do it. It took 2 years before we settled down into we knew who we were and what we were doing.
That begs the question then, how did you make that trip? How did Lou Grant change?
Well, I dismiss it by saying Mary Tyler Moore Lou Grant, I always tended to think I based on my two older brothers who were big and bombastic and flamboyant, and I instilled them into my character. Once I got into the hour show and began to feel the pangs of the demands of the script, I realized that this I needed to change. I could not do the character they were writing for me in that script by being my two brothers. So I then shoved that aside and went into myself and began to investigate my inner being and came up with whatever character I ended up with.
You know, I don't think there's any way to gauge this, but I think because of Lou Grant, more people went into print journalism.
Oh, please don't blame me. You can't put that blame on me.
You know, I thought that show was such a realistic depiction of journalism. And
it's also, it was the best enactment of journalism you could ever find.
It was a wonderful show. And I was reading today, and I didn't know this, and this was fascinating. That show came to an end not because of bad ratings or bad quality, but because of your activism. So I hear it.
Yeah.
Is that what happened there?
Well, I had assiduously avoided being too outspoken in politics, and I had become president of the Screen Actors Guild, which created enemies. And at that same time, I was very involved in the suffering going on in El Salvador. So I agreed to be on the board of Medical Aid for El Salvador, which was designed to get medical equipment and pharmaceuticals into the provinces of El Salvador where they were not being given by the existing government. To me, it was a humanistic effort. We made the announcement at a press conference in Washington in, I think, February of that year. And there was immediate firestorm of outrage and resentment that I was supplying the communists with help against the wishes of my government. And that firestorm lasted for a few months. At the same time, I had a firestorm going on in the union when the union decided, even before I got there, to bring in the extras of show business who were not, whose union had fallen into retirement. That stirred up certain actors, particularly Charlton Heston. They led the parade against me for that, as if I was responsible for it. And out in the country, in the hustings, there was outcry that I was using union money to supply the commies in El Salvador. Well, that splashed me with the coating of commie. And that lasted for a few months. And in May of that year, CBS decided to cancel the show.
Do you regret that it cost you that series, your activism?
The only thing I regretted was that I put a lot of 200 people out of work temporarily. I felt very badly about that. But as for the honor, the fact that the charges for the most part were false, lies, calumny, the honor it brought me for standing up and standing alone, and I was alone, it's kind of a trade-off. I regret a wonderful series was canceled that presented great ideas that weren't being presented by other shows, but at the same time I stood up for a principle against the yahoos of this country, and they did not crush me.
Well said. An interesting fact that I came across today that I did not know: you have won more Emmy Awards for performing than any other male actor, period. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means I won all those awards before I took a political position. I haven't won any awards since that happened. So you could say I kept my nose clean and got the awards. Now that I got my nose dirty, I don't win awards anymore.
Are the awards that political?
Well, you have to realize, every time you take a particularly social or political position as an individual, somebody is not going to buy a ticket to see you in the movies because of what you espouse. So it's automatically making enemies in an art that thrives on being financed. So if it's a TV show, people who can't stand whatever political ideas I may pronounce will say, screw him. So it's bound to affect your gait.
You know, it's interesting, though. Well, first of all, awards are not supposed to be based on gates. But are they in some way?
Well, no, they're not. They're not. I mean, granted, if I call myself a liberal and there are a bunch of liberals out there, they'll vote for me. But in the main, I think, I know I strive against discounting actors whose political views I despise. I try to judge the performance. I think most performers try to judge the performance. So in terms of awards, I guess I'm denying my earlier statement. But I think when it's left up to the actors voting for actors, you generally will get a fair shake.
You know, I really think my opinion, as well as a lot of people's, is that the reason you have continued to work so steadily when others have faced these walls, I guess is, for lack of a better term, what I would call it politically, is because you're so good. I mean, there's no reason to kiss up, but you really do make the screen come alive for a lot of people out there.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. I hope it's a correct assessment.
It continues to be, which is what we're all so happy about. Would you ever entertain the idea of retiring? We don't want you to, but would you?
Oh, no. Acting is my life. There is nothing for me except acting. And if I can't act, then I will go berserk.
There is a lady, I think, who feels the same way, who you have a very strong connection with, who is having the resurgence of a lifetime in her career, Betty White. What do you make of that?
I think she's been a keg of TNT who was sitting there all these years with a fuse ready to light. Finally, somebody lit the fuse.
You were very active, and maybe still are, for a lot of years in the fact that Hollywood does not use people of a certain age, senior citizens, or not even senior citizens, yeah, as often as they should. Does the Betty White resurgence give you great happiness?
It gives me great happiness. I also think it's a fluke. I think it's become a fashion. It is, it's a fad. A fad, and of course she never betrays the opportunity. She always delivers. So even when a million other women could do it, Betty White leaps to the idea, and of course her name carries such great cachet now that automatically when she's added to a company list, she's a plus, a giant plus.
Do you have a favorite Betty White memory that you can share with us?
Well, it's not a favorite. It's when I was president of the Guild and when we went on strike and we decided to stop, voluntarily to stop and appeal for everybody to not appear on game shows, to not appear on award shows, really an across-the-board action on the part of the union members. And so naturally we affected Betty's husband's game show, Password, and they were forced to shut down during the period of the strike. And that's the first time I really saw anger out of a la White. Her husband was kind and gentle with me, but boy, she was pissed.
Really? Betty has a side.
She got out of character.
You know, Ed, I gotta ask you this, and it's not trying to get any dirt or anything, but Betty White, I met her one time. It seems like she is that person. Are there moments when the cameras are off? You talked about one there, but are there other moments where she's not exactly like that?
Oh yeah, but I mean, she's you know, she's always careful, always careful. I mean, we'll sit there and trade body jokes with each other, but she certainly won't necessarily take it into the audience that way.
Hmm. Smart lady. Smart lady. Ed, what's the favorite role of your career? What's the one that gave you the most satisfaction?
Well, I can't deny the 12 years of Lou Grant, of whichever Lou Grant I was doing. That put me on the map, and it kept me going, and made me a household name. Rich Man, Poor Man was certainly another big one for me because it was a contrast, a great contrast. And I loved and identified that character enormously.
Two great roles that people will never forget. When a script shows up to your office today, how do you decide what you'll do and what you won't do?
Well, generally speaking, most of the scripts that arrive in my office are in hopes that I will somehow push them and get them produced, because there usually isn't that much for me. Once again, that senior citizen discrimination. So it's a script that that my heart warms to and that I want to see get done, rather than giving me a role that I can strut and stomp on.
When is there such a thing, and I think there is, as an Ed Asner type? Do people send you roles that are essentially Lou Grant, but gruffer, if that's a word?
Yeah, I suppose so. I did The Middle last week, and in that I played a small-town newspaper editor, so it wasn't a far stretch at all. So that definitely was a Lou Grant role. No, and I would tell you that when I was offered Rich Man, Poor Man, I couldn't believe it, because I had read the book, and I certainly didn't see me as that character at all. I found him much more handsome and much more interesting looking than I thought I was. But fortunately, I accepted their judgment and went on and played the hell out of it. I can't tell you. I'll have to tell you when the next role comes in.
And they'll keep... How many, this fascinates me. How many scripts do you get a week?
Oh, Not many, two to four.
And how many do you do in a month?
In a month?
Yeah, agree to do, would you say?
Pardon?
That you agree to do.
Oh, no. These are all speculative scripts looking for my help in getting them done.
Oh, okay.
I've only done three shows this year so far. That's the Betty White Show, The Middle, and now tonight, Hawaii 5-0. Nothing else is on the boards for me. I'm going out to do... I am going up to do Home Alone 5 for a day in Canada. Other than that, there is nothing else. Other than my FDR show.
You know, it's interesting, the actor's life. And I think you're a wonderful person to talk to about this, because you are such a great actor, as I've stated many times. Is it, at some points, about the money and not about the work? Most people will say no. But is there at some point you say, well, I don't really like this part, but they're offering a lot of money?
Oh, yes. If I haven't worked for a while and no money has come in, and I'm not going to be humiliated doing the role, I certainly will do it for the money. But that's almost never happened.
That's great.
I can name a few in the past that I did, thinking I could make something out of the crap. But I turn out to be wrong.
Do you want to name?
But in the main, I guess the power of self-conviction is, well, I can do something with this, and I will. And in the end, I don't achieve it.
What's the one that sticks in your mind that you did that you thought you could turn around, but once you saw it, you felt you didn't?
I did a thing called Doomsday Flight. It's where I learned another rule about acting. I was the manager of the airport, and there was a bomb on a plane. Edmund O'Brien had placed the bomb there. It was an anaerobic bomb. Jack Lord was the FBI man assisting me or using me to try to find out what we could do, to find out what kind of bomb it was and what plane it was on. And it turned out that it was an anaerobic bomb which would explode when it came below a certain altitude. Well, we finally figured that out. We got the plane to land in Denver and nobody got hurt. But so I would go, they would go back and forth with office scenes with me in the airport tower discussing strategy, etc. And I thought I was just banging up the storm with good acting. And then when I came to see the show, I realized the trap I had fallen into. Every scene was like the other scene. They were all alike. I had created no variation from scene to scene. And that taught me a big lesson. Never to do that again.
It's interesting. What do you make of reality television?
I don't watch it. I don't know. I know that it puts actors out of work, and I really don't care about it. I think even if I weren't an actor, I think I'd watch it and get sick of it.
Have you ever been offered a reality show?
No.
I heard years ago, and maybe I was wrong about this, that you were offered a reality program with the late Leslie Nielsen. Was that true?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that was called, but we were improvising. We were improvising humor all the way. And it was effective. It was good. And the network wouldn't give the producing company enough money to satisfy it, so it never took off. Within the same year, NBC came on with a show with... I can't remember the names. Two name actors. And then they did a movie. And I can't remember who was in the movie, but it dealt with two over the hill people, and the Bucket Brigade, I think, was one of the names. They were both failures. So it probably was a good idea that Leslie and I never got it off the ground.
I think that would have been very funny, though. I mean, it had to have been with you two together. I mean,
oh, yeah, because, well, I don't know about reality. We were busy creating an improv reality.
It sounded wonderful, and I think I heard it from Leslie at that time, when, at an interview I was doing, that he was working on that. What a loss he was. He was a funny guy.
He was beautiful. Oh. I liked him a lot.
Wonderful guy.
And the amazing thing is, I liked him as a dramatic actor before he became such a comic genius.
Well, you know, you both could do that. I mean, you both can play very serious and very funny. Want to take a slight deviation here in the end of the interview, as we approach the end, and I certainly appreciate the time you're giving me here. In recent years, if you get on the internet and you search Ed Asner's name on YouTube or any of these devices, one thing that comes up is your association with 9/11 documentaries and the conspiracy theory of it all.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that in a nutshell, which is kind of hard? What is your thought on what happened on 9/11?
Well, once again, I'm leaping overboard. I believe there are far too many holes in the whole story of 9/11 to accept the fact that those buildings came down from two plane crashes. There are many physical facts. There are architects and engineers and thousands of people who belong to it who espouse the idea that such demolition of buildings could not take place. The falsehood generating it and what it was designed to do, to plunge us and our military head over heels into the Middle East, to drive out Saddam Hussein and take over that country, and to kill the people we killed there and to lose the people that we lost there. I think it is the most flagrant false flag operation that this country has ever engaged in. And I do feel it was a false flag operation.
What is the number one idea that makes you think it was false flag?
The number one idea?
Yeah, the number one reason, fact.
Those buildings fell in 10 seconds. Demolished totally. Melted into the ground in dust. And no one, absolutely no one, talks about building number 7 collapsing into dust, though it was not hit by a plane. And there's even a quote from the owner of the building who says, "We'll have to pull it." Well, that means they have to haul explosives in to take down that building. When did they put the explosives in there? Nobody knows that. Nobody knows. That building just came down because they pulled it. And if that building could have been brought down in, what, 5 seconds maybe? There's no reason in the world that the same effect wasn't used by pre-planted explosives in the Twin Towers.
We've recently had on James Mars on this program, so it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic. And the most interesting thing about it is that most Americans don't want to talk about it. They don't want to hear about it. And if they do hear about it, they either don't like the idea that there is no Santa Claus, i.e. no significance to American purity, or they don't want to hear about it based on the grounds that if they listen too strongly and intently, they might get implicated and become believers in my insanity.
That's very well put. Very interestingly put. It was you used the term false flag there, called it a false flag. It was also reported recently on another talk program that you did that you said that Navy SEALs had told you that military action against Iran is forthcoming and will be preceded by a false flag operation. What can you tell me beyond the statement about that?
I really can't, except in this particular case, there are several other players involved. and certainly the most predominant one being Israel. It's possible that the score will take place first with Israel and Iran engaging in some form of action. Iran overextending itself, or a false flag being involved in Iran's reaction, and causing us to step in with big bombs. That's all I can suspect. That's all I know. I don't know if the SEALs are right, or who's right. But we'll see what happens before November.
And November is the time frame that you got from them?
Yeah, just like you had your October surprise with Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. One day the prisoners won't be released. Reagan gets elected, the prisoners get released. The hostages get released.
Very interesting. Do the Navy SEALs seek you out, or do you seek them out? How does that work?
Just a couple of mavericks. As a body, they do not.
That's fascinating, and I think it's fascinating, and I applaud you for having the courage to speak out about things like that.
Well, I don't know about courage. I just try to abide by certain principles of honesty. Outrage, I must admit.
Well, you know, that's the thing, and it's very interesting because we all know that celebrities, actors, people in the public eye, broadcasters, they hold back sometimes. They have opinions that they go home with. They read books. They're not dumb people. But they don't say them because they either suspect it will definitely hurt their career, bring an end to it, or that it's going to hurt them financially. You don't do that, and oddly enough, it hasn't brought an end to your career. It might have hurt you in periods, like you said, but it certainly hasn't brought the end. Has there ever been a subject that you held back on because you thought that might happen?
Oh, I think so. I think I go far, but not too far. There are areas that I will soft pedal, and I did it for years before I came out on El Salvador, and I came out on El Salvador on humanistic grounds. And those grounds were corrupted into being a commie. I used to speak of Lou Grant and the subjects we wouldn't deal with. One was abortion. The other was school busing at the time. And gun control. And we did not delve deeply into those at all. In terms of my own life and what I have stayed away from, I can't recall right now.
As we approach the end of this interview, I want to bring it back to acting to ask one question. When you are starting out, you walk on the set, you're an actor, you do your thing. What's it like now? When you step on the set, you're Ed Asner to a lot of people. A lot of people know you. A lot of people respect you. What's the difference?
I've never thought about it. I go onto a set to be as friendly as I can to those who are there. I hope I extend respect to them and immediately get my nose out of joint if they don't extend respect to me. In my verbal offerings, I think I'm being a normal guy, either making a joke or talking about the scene, or complimenting a fellow actor or actors on work I've seen them do or are doing. I try to make myself comfortable, and I certainly try to make them comfortable with me. When I started out, I would say I walked on a set, and I guess if I wasn't seeking immediate respect, I guess I was seeking immediate love. And a few times, I never got it. But I don't worry about it anymore.
At this stage in the game, Have you ever come across a fellow actor or a director who's working with Ed Asner now that they're a little intimidated? They don't want to come at you as they would an unknown.
I see nervous actors. I don't know if they're nervous because of me or because of they're nervous working. It's hard to distinguish.
Is it hard for a director to tell you what to do?
I guess so.
I think it would be intimidating. Final question, as we bring this, what I think's been a fascinating interview, to a close. How would you want to be remembered? The typical ending question, the epitaph.
A person who believed indelibly in his craft, that he was a good craftsman, and who loved the art of performance, and who was willing to speak his mind while loving to act.
Perfect way to end, and I want to thank you so much for giving me the time to do this. And I want to say this, in an interview, take a personal moment here, because I don't know if I'll ever get the chance again, but I try hard not to say I. And in this interview, I found myself saying I quite a bit, but I think that's because I have such a huge amount of respect for you, and watching you over the years has made me effusive in certain ways. I certainly am a fan. There's no doubt, no denying that. And I really do believe that in the world of acting, where we hear about Sir Laurence Olivier, we hear about Marlon Brando, we hear about these great actors who we revere, I think sometimes, honest to goodness, no reason to kiss any butt here, but we leave Ed Asner's name off there, because you are as good on the screen and on the stage as I have ever seen anybody be. And I don't know if it's because you were in a sitcom that people don't put you in that category, but that's baloney. You are one of the best, a treasure, an American treasure.
Well, God love you, man.
No, you are the best. I just can't tell you how television, sometimes you can't feel it. You can't laugh out loud. You can't do this. You can't do that, because it's in the box. You've made the box come alive for all of us.
That's very, very sweet of you. And sweet in a meaningful way, and you touch me.
Well, I hope you come back in the future, because whether it's politics or talking your business of acting, you are fascinating. Ed Asner is a fascinating guy, aside from all the characters you've played.
Thank you.
It's been effusive. Ed Asner, one of our treasures in the world of acting.
I'll never forget you.